Hello, my name is Kylie De La Cruz, and I'm a student project manager here at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. I had the privilege of working on our event, Bridging Differences in Difficult Times, a Science-Based Approach, which was presented by Juliana Tafur. Juliana Tafur is the director of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center's Bridging Differences program and is on a mission to bridge political and cultural divides using resources rooted in science. Welcome, Juliana.
Thank you, Kylie. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I wanted to start off by saying that your lecture was incredibly eye-opening and inspiring. I thought that your point about the difference between finding common ground and commonalities through discussion was really insightful. For those who missed it, could you go over this misconception and how it relates to bridging differences?
Yeah, thank you, Kylie. Yeah, it's great to start off by describing what bridging differences is and isn't, because I feel like bridging differences is oftentimes misperceived. So to simplify, bridging differences is the practice of recognizing and respecting that others have their own needs, values, and worldviews, just as we do. And it is important for people to understand that it is not persuasion, it is not compromise. It's truly about connecting across our differences. And to the point of common ground versus commonalities, a lot of people assume that you have to reach this kind of mushy middle when you bridge differences, that you have to meet the other person somewhere in the middle. Maybe to lessen what you believe or to attract them towards your position. And that is not what we're inviting people to do when we invite them to bridge differences. Instead, we are inviting them to see those differences and to still perhaps disagree if they so wish, but to connect on things that they might share or have in common, which leads to the commonalities, right? So can people find a shared identity with the other person that might be bigger than the difference at hand? And that can be they're studying the same major, or they like the same sport, or they are more extroverted or introverted, or they like to play a musical instrument, and the list goes on. So what are these kind of human things, traits that connect us that we can bond over, and from there begin to bridge our differences without necessarily having to compromise our beliefs or our identities?
Yeah, a lot of the work you do is about using these science-backed strategies to facilitate conversations and bridge these socio-political and cultural divides. What are some strategies that we can use to our advantage that you're really pushing students particularly to be using in classrooms?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have multiple science-based skills for bridging differences, and they range from listening with compassion to finding shared identities, which I just talked about, to practicing perspective taking, to trying self-distancing, and I can explain what a few of those are. So let's start off with listening with compassion. So the premise is that science shows us that if we want someone to listen to us, we should start by listening more closely to them. And actually, when we listen, we are perceived as more trustworthy, and it encourages our conversation partners to be more open-minded, less defensive, and even less focused on their self-interests, which is quite marvelous that actually happens as you sit down to listen to someone. And then there's self-distancing, which I also briefly mentioned. So this is a skill to use when conversations get heated and we get caught up in our thoughts and our emotions and we almost can't engage constructively. So self-distancing encourages us to view ourselves from an outsider's perspective and think about ourselves in the third person. So for example, instead of me saying, "Why am I so angry?" or "I'm so angry," I would say, "Juliana is so angry. Why is Juliana so angry?" And what science shows is that by doing this, we are able to see ourselves from a distance, get some perspective, and are able to come back and after we have regained our composure. Then we have skills like finding shared identities, right? So this is all about tapping into what we have in common as fellow, you fill in the blanks, right? And again, connecting over that as a skill so that we can then move on to either have harder conversations and listen compassionately, or so that we can begin to work together on common goals, which is another really important skill. And the premise of this is that when we identify a common goal that we want to work towards, focusing on that goal shifts our perception from maybe adversaries or opponents or different to collaborators. And when we, again, talk about bridging differences, we're not only inviting folks to have conversation and dialogue, we are actually also inviting folks to move towards solving shared problems that matter to them.
What are some of these shared problems that we should really be coming together to solve through this collaboration?
Well, societally, we need to solve the problem of polarization.
Absolutely.
And division and fear of the other. I think that is one of the biggest problems of our times. And I think it's worth our devotion and courage to solve that for starters, which is a big one, right? But some of the science-based skills for bridging differences that we provide and equip people with are precisely to make it a little bit easier for folks to trust that they can do the work, knowing that it's, you know, science-backed, knowing that they too can do it, right? I think we have forgotten that we're able to do that. We no longer know how to disagree without canceling each other out. And our disagreements are not the issue. We can all have different ways of being in this world. And the problem is how polarizing those divisions have become, those differences have become, rather. And we need to learn how to be with each other again, because it is truly only together that we will get out of this. We are not going to get out of this if we continue in our silos. Retreating to our cocoons may seem like the way to go, given the times, but that only means we are excluding ourselves from co-creating the world that we want to build.
Absolutely. And speaking of these social divisions, have you noticed in your workshops or in these discussions any barriers that have been particularly hard for individuals to see past, like racial identity, political stance? Has there been something that's been nearly universally hard for individuals to bridge?
Yeah, I think people's difficulties depend on people's personal experiences. So yes, there are certainly some issues and some topics that are harder for people to bridge on. Like racial divides in the US is one very, very complex topic that we all know is very difficult to bridge. Some hot button issues like abortion, guns, immigration are hot button topics to bridge. That said, that is up for individuals to determine where is their threshold, like what exactly is their threshold of engagement, where do they draw the line? As to kind of what is safe, what is comfortable for them to do. And I know in the talk, I talked about situatedness, which is a concept that was shared by John Powell in his book, The Power of Bridging. And this refers to different groups and communities, depending on their situatedness and context, will have different capacities to adapt. So part of bridging then is to understand how we are situated differently. And this, what it does is it empowers people to understand that, yes, they may be part of a particular identity, have affinity towards a particular community, but given where they stand and maybe other privileges that they have because they're more educated or because they have citizenship in this country, because they have a microphone and have access to folks, they are differently situated than someone who is at risk, threatened, someone who might be deported in a moment's notice, right? So situatedness matters, and it's important for us to understand that in both how we engage in bridging differences, as well as in our call to bridge as we seek to be allies to people who don't have the same situatedness.
And what are some, you've discussed it a little, but what are some habits that we can add to our routine that can help us perhaps expand this situatedness to increase our capacity to have these conversations?
Well, it's very useful for people to understand that them and others are not just one thing, right? That we are complex, multidimensional beings, and we are not just one label. We're not just conservative or liberal or Christian or Hindu or whatever else you might assign to a person as a category that is fixed and unchangeable. We are much more than that. So this is about complexifying stories and seeing people in their full essence so that we don't miss the opportunity to learn what we do have in common, what they care about, the complexity of who they are. So that allows us to take a little step back or a big step back and understand that throwing people under entire blankets of you are this or you are that is to their disfavor and to our disfavor as we seek to explore common humanity and what we might share across our differences.
Yeah, and you also have a 7-day challenge, if that's correct?
Yeah, we're launching a 7-day Campaign for Connection challenge, which we're really excited about. So it's 7 days of skills that if people sign up, the skills are gonna be delivered in their inbox, one skill a day. And we're gonna have things like listening with compassion and perspective taking and finding shared identities and others. And the idea is to give people the science, a little bit of the science, but definitely like practical, here's how you can practice 1, 2, 3 steps. And it includes things like a self-reflection or a conversation with a trusted relative or friend or a journaling exercise. So it's like a nice way for people to get their feet wet on what are some of the skills that they can use when they so feel ready to engage.
And on that topic of feeling ready to engage, what do you say to people who feel that they can't engage in these discussions because they need to protect their peace? What do we need to have in order to feel safe in these discussions?
Yeah, so we talk about having and expecting openness, acceptance, as well as respect. So what this looks like in essence is that as long as someone's opposing belief is not denying your existence, and if respect is present, you should be able, I mean, if you so wish, obviously it's always a choice, but you should be able to engage more safely in these conversations. That said, as I kind of alluded to, I know the stakes are really high right now and people are very fearful and a lot of people are feeling triggered and some might feel like their identity is being questioned or opposed. So through this concept of situatedness and where they might be situated in a context, how can we still empower folks who are able to engage? So we're complexifying that a little bit more because while it's understandable for a group to retreat from shared spaces, from dialogue, from conversations, Again, quoting John Powell, he says it is very doubtful that segregation and retreat can provide either safety or opportunity, given that segregation is imposed on a people for the benefit of a different people. So I just want us to know that, that retreat means self-segregating, and that is not to our benefit in the end.
Absolutely. And your award-winning film, Listen, you actually helped mediate discussions between individuals who were not afraid to retreat. And I was wondering if during the filming and producing of this, were there any profound moments or something that you learned that resonated deeply with you within these conversations?
So let me give you a little context and background of how Listen, the film, came to be. So for me, it started after the 2016 election. And I was really fearful and also disliked my distrust towards those who seemed different from me because they supported the political candidate that I didn't. And I realized that I was beginning to other folks who were othering perhaps people like me. And I thought that I would break that cycle of fear and hatred, really, by getting to know people who were different from me. So I brought them together for a film, like you said, called Listen, that brought together three sets of participants across the topics of abortion, guns, and immigration. And their stories were very deeply connected, intertwined with the issues that they believed in. And I'm not going to go into details about those stories, but I will say that I did notice that the participants all went in with the intention to convince their counterpart that their position was right or wanting to win. And what I was able to witness is that they were able to transcend their differences because they listened. And transcending their differences did not mean agreeing. They still walked away believing what they believed, but they were able to open their hearts to the experience of the other person. And they were able to connect on a human level while still disagreeing. And what was really special to me was to see them saying to each other things like, I know we don't agree, but I do understand why you made the choice you made. Or I can understand why you would have a view like that in the way that you do, right? And I didn't think we would get there. I didn't think that across these very complex issues, folks would actually be able to see each other's generosity and multiplicity and even beauty across their differences. And that transformed me in the process. And then I wanted to devote every second of my life to doing this work from that point forward.
Thank you so much, Juliana. I wanted to thank you for taking the time to sit down with me. The work you do is so great. I hope to be seeing more of your work, perhaps at Dickinson College.
Thank you, Kylie. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate you.
Thank you.